Good morning to all. Whether you are joining us online or here in the sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I'm the Reverend Michelle LaGrave, the co-lead interim minister, and my pronouns are she, her. I am a queer, white, disabled woman of middle age wearing a beautiful blue stole. And I am so excited to be back with all of you this morning. I want to send a special welcome out to all of you who may be new to this congregation or new to Unitarian Universalism. If you are joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us all know where you are coming from. If you are here in person, please join us for the social hour after worship in the big hall right behind you. There will be food. There's always food here. No matter which way you have joined us this morning, we invite you to fill out a visitor form at austinuu.org. You can begin by clicking on worship and then the form itself. We would love to get to know you better, and this will help us to do just that. For all, please know that this worship service will include open and frank discussion of what might be difficult topics for you, abortion and childbearing. You are invited to take care of yourselves in whatever way it is that you need. As we work to create beloved community, we welcome all who would join us in building a better world with more love, more justice, and more peace. We welcome all who would join us in growing in mind, heart, and spirit. We welcome all who would join us in tearing down systems of oppression of all kinds. We welcome all who would join their purposes to ours in a loving spirit of right relationship. We come from a long tradition of seeing a spark of the divine in every person. It is in this tradition, this living tradition, that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments or by turning to those around you. Now, let us greet the holy that lives in each of us this morning. This is the flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine upon systems of oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation. Our call to worship this morning comes from Elizabeth Mount. To begin, to start, to create, to undertake, to grow, to promise, to increase, to generate. All these are our birthright. As we are created, so we may create. The ability and the choice to create is sacred. To withdraw that chance from any person without their permission would be a violent act, the cutting off of life itself. And yet, as precious is the right to, simply not. To end, to terminate, to stop, to discontinue, to rest, to hibernate, to impede, to prevent. These two are our birthright. For without consent, our ability to create becomes not a blessing, but a burden and an imposition. Without space for a no, there can be no trustworthy yes. Today we come to this holy place and time, ready to invoke the divine, to make space for the sacred, to co-create community once again. This too is a choice. You cannot, you may not be coerced into relationship with the holy or with one another. I invite you, I ask you to join us. I respect it if you will not today or ever. More sacred than any other individual need is choice, the right to know oneself, the right to know what you are ready for, what you need, to stretch when you can, to pause when you will, to know your body, your mind, your spirit better than anyone else, and ultimately, to be trusted with the responsibility of your own living. One of the things that binds First UU together as a religious community is that the congregation has a common purpose. For First UU, that common purpose is the mission. The congregation wrote it together and put it up on the wall in the sanctuary. Every Sunday, church participants say it together so that we may more readily carry it with us in our hearts throughout the week. Let us say it together now. Together we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
Might as well be you and take a chance. Wear your own shoes if you're gonna dance. Sing a song that's in your heart. Let your footprint make its mark. Might as well be you and take a chance.
Reading this morning is from Lindsay Comey. Revolutionaries are everyday people. The whole point about revolution is seeing the things that are intolerable and insisting on making change. And it takes everyday people to do that. The people in power, they don't want to change. They don't want to see it. It's the everyday people that are the revolutionaries. You don't wake up one day and suddenly have this revolutionary fervor that you're going to turn the world upside down. One day you wake up and realize that you're just not going to do the same thing again and again and again and expect a different outcome. That you're going to start to feel in your soul what place you want to live in, where you want to be, and you're going to start to create that with your community. So revolutionary fervor is really just that great space of change and transition that we learn to feel. Revolutionary people, that's just the we. We the people. That's the revolutionary that you see. So welcome to the world. Just open your eyes and revolution grows. That's how we change everything that we know.
Please join me in a spirit of meditation. Find a comfortable place to be. Feel the presence of the ground beneath you, which nourishes and sustains us all. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing so, and take a deep breath in. I invite you into a time of gratitude, reflection, renewal, and hope with these words by Sam Trumbore. What an unearned blessing to delight in the calming peace of this space. To hear the birds' song again at daybreak. To feel the warmth in this room. And to enjoy the promise of summer upon us. Each moment of wakefulness has so many gifts that offer energy and delight. Yet too often they seem unavailable as the weight of our troubles presses down on us, the threats to our well-being, real or exaggerated, feel like mosquitoes in the night looking for a place to land. Minds become captive to rising floodwaters, forceful, murky, threatening, and ominous. Even in moments of great danger, the direction of attention is a choice. Fear can dominate the mind, binding it like a straitjacket, or love can unbind it and open it to resource and opportunity. The soil of the mind can be watered with kindness. The thorns can be removed one by one to appreciate the buds ready to flower. Great possibilities await us, even if all we can see is the cliff before us. The grandeur of life, of which we are a part, scatters rainbows in every direction, even as the deluge approaches. Holding reality and possibility together is the holy, hope-filled work of humanity, if we choose it again and again and again in love. Now, as we breathe together, let us enter into a time of sacred silence, all the way while remembering that nowhere is the world fully silent. I invite you now to light a candle if you are so moved. Candles representing sorrow, joy, hope, remembrance, resilience, whatever it is that you need to honor during this time. As we light candles, I invite you to keep in your mind and heart members of our community who are ill or in sorrow, and those who are celebrating joys. Now let us hold the silence together throughout this meditative time. And now let us light one last candle for all those for whom there is no one to light a candle.
So people ask me, why are you so passionate about reproductive justice? They assume I've had an abortion and this is personal. Well, no, I have not had an abortion. Although unintended pregnancy is very common, I have not had birth control fail. I have not been the victim of coercion. I haven't been impregnated by rape or incest. But mostly, I got a late start. So no, I haven't had an abortion. but I'm passionate about this topic because I've experienced reproductive freedom. I know what it made, what a difference it made in my life, and I cannot fathom that we would not demand the same for all people. One of the four tenets of reproductive justice, I have been able to choose to have children, and that includes when, how many, and with whom. And a second tenet of reproductive justice, I've been able to raise those children in a safe and sustainable environment. That's reproductive freedom. And a third tenet of reproductive justice is the right to choose not to have children. And I know that if I had experienced an unwanted pregnancy, I would have had access to the health care. I would have had the money. I would have had transportation. My documentation status would have allowed me to travel. I would have had access to childcare, everything that is needed. The last tenet of reproductive justice is the right to maintain personal bodily autonomy. Now that one strikes home. Pregnancy is not health neutral. Birth can be brutal and physically damaging. I experienced trauma, birth trauma, with my first child, and I was left with a lifelong daily reminder, pelvic organ prolapse. I am by no means alone in this. I know that statistically, I share that condition to at least some extent with half the women in this room and online who have given birth. Urinary incontinence, anybody? In addition, during labor and delivery, I was subjected to medical procedures I did not want. And for 3 days after my son was born, I had a screaming, hungry baby. I was determined to breastfeed, but no breast milk. That wasn't resolved until I was rushed to the hospital with postpartum hemorrhage due to, it was discovered, my placenta still abnormally attached to the uterine wall. No breast milk because my body thought I was still pregnant. I would have died without blood transfusions and medical intervention. The birth of my second child also involved a life-threatening condition. My son Patrick, a very active child, was also evidently active in the womb, so much so that he wound the umbilical cord around his chest and was lodged sideways in my uterus. This is known as a transverse lie, and going into labor leads to serious complications, up to and including maternal and fetal death. So I had a C-section, although that was also higher risk due to the position of the baby. Does any of this sound familiar? The 2 years since Dobbs has been like a nationwide seminar in obstetrical emergencies. Well, even with those unexpectedly difficult encounters, I experienced reproductive freedom. I told my husband I was done having children, and it was abstinence or vasectomy. Happily, he chose the latter, and I am not making this up. His urologist was Dr. Dick Chop. So, no, I did not have an abortion, but I have experienced reproductive freedom, and everything that I am today, my whole life is defined by that. Pregnancy, gestation, birth, lactation, and parenting, let's not forget parenting, are all life-altering events. They have physical, emotional, and economic consequences. They are risks that require consent. No person should be forced into bearing a child they do not want. I hope my story illustrates that reproductive justice is not only for people who have had or will need an abortion. Reproductive justice is for all of us. For women who may not ever experience an unwanted pregnancy, but still have to deal with other aspects of sexual health and sexual determination. For trans folks who want to make choices about their bodies. For people with disabilities who have a right to desire, intimacy, and sexual pleasure. for women who have children and the people who parent them, and for men. Today in this service, reproductive justice is about men too. First, it is personal for men. You men all know and likely love someone who had a baby or wants to have a baby or might get pregnant. You care about them. It affects you when they are denied their human rights. Second, your body may not be under attack, but you deserve the right to control the future of your family. Just because the government isn't controlling your body as a man doesn't mean the government isn't also controlling you. What's next? What other of your freedoms are at risk? You should get to make your own decisions. You are a stakeholder. And third, for the white men here listening or listening online, do you believe you have an obligation to speak up on racism? For straight men, do you believe you have an obligation to speak up on homophobia? Well, yes, then this is the same thing. If one of us is oppressed, all of us are oppressed. Silence is consent. You need to be an ally. We need to hear from men. We need to hear their personal stories about reproductive rights and justice and freedom. We need to hear them speak out publicly to call out bad actors to refute the lies and misogyny pervading our society right now. We need them to speak up privately with friends and family to normalize discussions about reproductive health, reinforcing the behavior that we do say the word abortion and menstruation and infertility and all the words that we have stigmatized and silenced because they deal with reproduction and reproductive health. This service is giving all of us a chance to step up. We have invited three people today to tell their stories about reproductive justice. First is Samuel Franco, Austin-based member of the national organization Men for Choice, dedicated to mobilizing male allies into the fight for self-determination and full control over our bodies. Then we will hear from Kellen A. Blake, executive director of Black Mamas ATX, the community partner the Reproductive Justice Team has chosen to support as a part of our mission. And finally, Toga Pendrake, a member of our Reproductive Justice Team, will read the anonymous account of a man in this congregation who works with a community network providing abortion medication to people in states with abortion. Thank you. And Samuel?
Good morning. My name is Samuel Franco. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm here to speak on Men for Choice. And thank you for saying those words, because it is extremely important that we have male allies in this fight. I'll start by telling you a little story, my story. Many years ago, when I was a much younger man, I had an abortion. And I say those words not to take anything away from women or people who can get pregnant, but to stand in solidarity with those that can get pregnant. And to normalize the conversation, to accept the fact that the role that men play in this conversation. Many years ago, when I was finishing up grad school, I met a young lady who was also finishing her studies in El Paso. That's where I'm from. And we took a liking to each other, and we knew we were both going to leave El Paso afterwards. Well, shortly, about 2 weeks after getting to Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I had moved to, she called me up and let me know that she was pregnant. So I rushed back to El Paso, not telling anybody in my family, no friends, nothing, just me and her. Growing up a Latino Catholic on the border, abortion is not something we talked about. It's pretty much stigmatized. So we spent the weekend discussing our lives, our hopes, our dreams, where we were at, what we were going to do, and knowing that we weren't going to be together, and what was best for us and best for that potential child. And we decided that what was best for that potential child was not having that child, and that was best for us at that time. So Monday we went to the clinic and did what we had to do. I tell you this story because I was reminded of it a couple of years ago after Dobbs. And I was sitting there looking at social media, and I saw all these protests, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, why wasn't I there? And then I remembered, oh, because I'm a heterosexual, cisgendered male, and those algorithms are not for me, right? And so then I started looking around, and I thought to myself, there's got to be more men like me. And that's when I was introduced to Men for Choice. And so I want to talk to you a little bit about Men for Choice today. Men for Choice was founded in 2015 with a mission to activate, educate, and mobilize male allies in the movement for reproductive rights. Recognizing that too many men have remained passive in this critical issue, Men for Choice aims to change that by engaging men as active partners and allies. The organization believes that reproductive freedom is a fundamental right and that everyone should have the autonomy to make decisions about their own bodies without interference. Men for Choice is unique in their strategic focus on young men, particularly those aged 18 through 25, through initiatives like their Youth Fellowship Program. This program is designed to build a pipeline of well-trained allies who can influence and support reproductive rights both now and in the future. By educating young men on the realities and impacts of reproductive laws, Men for Choice equips them with the knowledge and tools needed to become effective advocates. Their work is crucial for several reasons. Firstly, engaging men in the fight for reproductive rights helps dismantle the deeply ingrained misogyny and sexism that often drive restrictive laws and policies. By changing the culture from within, Men for Choice aims to create a more equitable society where everyone's rights are respected. Secondly, the organization amplifies the voices and efforts of women and those directly affected by anti-choice legislation, providing much-needed support and solidarity. Men for Choice has made significant strides by organizing educational events, mobilizing volunteers for on-the-ground actions, and running impactful digital campaigns. In conclusion, the work of Men for Choice is vital not only for advancing reproductive rights, but also for fostering a culture of equity and respect. By bringing men into the fold as allies, they help to build a stronger, more inclusive movement that can effectively challenge and change oppressive systems. I encourage everyone to learn more about Men for Choice and consider how you can contribute to this essential cause. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Kelene Blake. My voice is a little bit unusual, but maybe only a couple of people might recognize that. Ooh, that was loud. And I'm the executive director of Black Mamas ATX. So I'm going to be a little softer than usual today, but I wanted to talk about reproductive justice from my perspective as a Black woman who works in this field. Now, specifically, as Elizabeth pointed out so well, there are four parts to reproductive justice. And is everyone hearing me in the back? Yes, okay, great. The sound system is amazing. The ability to maintain bodily autonomy. That is huge. The ability to have children, not have children, and if you do have children, to be able to raise those children in safe and sustainable communities. These are things that Black women have been systematically deprived of from the inception of the United States project that we're existing in. And what is interesting is that reproductive justice has been, you know, created by Black women. And I first learned about reproductive justice not in birth and not related to abortion, but since the Supreme Court rolled back abortion rights, I've heard it a lot more in, you know, communities that are not mine and specifically focused on abortion, and that is really important. It has been an important catalyst for this change and for the awareness of this concept. However, this is a whole concept, and so I'm going to talk about some of the other aspects of it as well. So I learned about this first when I would say about 8 years ago, about a decade ago, when the Black community in particular was coming to grips with how prevalent or how, not really how prevalent, but how traumatic police brutality was becoming in our community, and how often we were literally seeing modern-day lynchings of Black community members through social media. How does reproductive justice come in there? How did I first learn about it then? One, studies show, especially from that time, one of the first things that a lot of people, you know, hear when they find out they're pregnant, you know, they're like, oh, is it a boy or a girl? That's the first thing they want to ask, right? Or, you know, they're excited, they're enthusiastic. Black women asked often, is it a boy or a girl? And if they found out it was a boy, their hearts would sink. Because Trayvon Martin, because of the many black boys and men that were experiencing state-sanctioned violence. Not to say black women were not, but as always, black women's stories are not highlighted. But yes, so in this concept, the idea of safe, sustainable communities in which to raise your black boys and girls is really important. No aspect of justice work is siloed or separate from the other aspects. It all is intertwined. And so it is really important to see this very necessary and valuable push to, you know, regain abortion rights, in conjunction with all the other fights for justice and freedom and liberation of all the very, you know, different groups needing those same things. The work that I do, we specifically work with folks who are pregnant, and we provide doula support because, if I'm going to be really honest, it feels very dangerous to be a pregnant black woman in a hospital giving birth, or even with a midwife giving birth if that midwife is not black, or birth center, or any of these spaces. And so working with a doula, you have someone who's, yes, they're coaching you as the pregnant person through the birth, but they're also advocating for you and helping to prevent any dangers. And that is why they make such a difference. But then, as part of reproductive justice, as part of helping black women and birthing folks survive and thrive, we also have to look at access to mental health support. We also have to help people pay their bills and rent. Last month, we had a mom who was about to be evicted with a newborn baby, and we had to work to get her into a space so she has her own space to live. We have countless moms, and it's increasing every month, who literally, their lights are getting shut off. They're worried about their water getting shut off, right? And they're pregnant and postpartum and have these newborns. This is part of that safe, sustainable community. We are having to build it kind of offline with our work as a small nonprofit. But we need to be, we're just plugging the gaps where we can. This needs to be something that is accessible to everyone, everywhere, whether or not they, you know about Black Mama's ATX or one of our doulas can serve them. So that is my take on how we are working towards reproductive justice. We are in support of our brothers and sisters who are doing the hard and scary work of addressing abortion rights in Texas. That is frightening. And whenever y'all need us, call us and we will be there to support you. I also want to be able to call you because there's the everyday parts of it that's happening as well. That's not as loud and not as I would say, in the zeitgeist of the conversation. You know, so that is what I wanted to raise today as part of reproductive justice. Thank you for hearing me out. Thank you for your attention and your kind faces as I'm, as I'm up here a little nervous, but really appreciating your ear.
Howdy, howdy, everybody. My name is Toga Pendrake, and I'm specifically up here to read a submission by a member of this congregation who didn't feel comfortable reading this or sharing this information. I'd like to say that this is my first time up here, and I'm very proud that the first time I could speak up here was in support of reproductive rights and reproductive justice. I am a union electrician. I work with the National Mobilization for Reproductive Justice, and this is something that I can't defend enough, and I can't ask. I think everyone should be, you know, involved with. I did want to say that there are some serious language in this submission, and I do think that it's important that it's read and that we have the conversations with that serious language. But before that, I just wanted to say, again, I was asked when they came up to me with this opportunity, why am I so passionate about this issue? What is the driving force behind my involvement? And to a certain extent, I understand the question, but I think that it should be at a point where you have to defend your opposition as opposed to your desire to be involved. I think that everyone here knows someone who has had an abortion in your circle, in your friends, in your family. We don't speak about it, and I think that that contributes to why there's so much shame and why we don't know if we speak, if we talk, if we communicate, we'll understand that the people that we love and the people that build our communities may have had one and that they need our support, and that in the future our children, our sisters, our neighbors will also need them, and that we need to have that opportunity there for them. So now I'll start reading the submission. I'm writing to you as a member of this congregation. Some of you know me. I am scared to write the words being read to you. I do not want to draw attention to myself and the work that I do. I volunteer for an organization which distributes abortion medication to women in the United States where abortion is illegal. I send the medication anonymously through the mail. If I were caught, I expect to face significant prison time. There is no doubt in my mind that the Texas Attorney General would prosecute me with all the power at their disposal. As a straight white male, the politics would be easy. I carry none of the problematic ethics or optics they would face going after, say, a rape victim or even a poor woman of color. For the AG Attorney General, I would be a trophy. They would send out campaign fundraising emails bragging about my incarceration. I also fear the anti-abortion movement. They do not believe that women and pregnant people have basic human rights. Most believe that abortion is murder, which to their way of thinking would make me an accessory. Many are armed. Many have sent death threats to legal abortion providers. Some have bombed clinics. Others have murdered healthcare workers in broad daylight. My only security is my secrecy. Doing what I do risks violence on my family, but I will not stop. You see, for every package I put in the mail, there is a pregnant person who needs help and has no one else to turn to. The recipient might be a working mother barely scraping by with two kids, utterly unable to support a third. She might be a woman trying to escape an abusive relationship, knowing full well a child would tie her to her abuser for life. They might be an underage girl or a trans boy, a victim of rape or incest, living in a state where even under such heartbreaking circumstances, they do not have the rights to make basic decisions about their body. They might be someone whose own health or life might be dangerously at risk if they are forced to give birth. For some, abortion is necessary, life-saving medical treatment. None of the recipients will ever know my name. Whatever they may think, none of them will ever thank me. And that's good. Every package I send is a second chance for someone who desperately, desperately needs it. And that is thanks enough. What are my fears compared to that? What would you do if you had the chance? Would you wait and trust the Supreme Court to somehow fix the harm they created? Would you wait for political candidates who love nothing other than power to see abortion as a winning issue? What I do provides direct help to women who need it, to people who have been abandoned by the legal system and ignored or demonized by the political class for generations. In fact, I consider it a privilege that through sheer dumb luck, I came to have an opportunity to do this work. I'll continue taking the risks that I do until I'm caught or we all rise up. This is my story. Everyone in this congregation has their story too. Many of you, I know, support abortion rights. You vote for candidates who champion them and would vote for reproductive rights and justice directly if given the chance. But there is more of you, there's more you can do and must do to achieve a just and equitable world we strive for. I urge all of you, but men especially, to go talk to our fellow congregates volunteering at Reproductive Justice Table in House and Hall after the service today. Show up to meetings with the Reproductive Juice, with the Reproductive Justice Group. Get educated on the current state of affairs and learn how to organize change. We also ask that you pick up period kits and condom kits at the Reproductive Justice Table and consider handing them out to homeless people. In addition, please learn about our congregation's support for Black Mamas ATX. Consider supporting Black Mamas ATX directly yourself. Abortion rights and reproductive justice are about basic human rights, rights which they are trying to take away for good. If men stay uninvolved, believing this is a woman's issue, we will all lose.
Please join me in the words for the extinguishing of the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. We bring from our hearts until we are together again. Go in peace with love in your hearts, kindness on your lips, and compassion at your fingertips, blessing all others as you yourselves are now blessed. Amen, and blessed be.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.